Francis, do you recall the Red Canyon? You'll die! 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 You took everything that I loved!
Welcome to the NExpress Nintendo Podcast. I am your host, Patrick Murphy. There's only one person joining me today because we're having kind of a special podcast here, a one-game podcast, all based around Fire Emblem Three Houses. And joining me today is Matthew Pontier. Is that right? Pontier?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about, we're not the only two people on the site that have played this. So Matthew, for anybody who doesn't know, is our anime editor. And he also has his own podcast about anime. So you guys should definitely check that out. Mm-hmm. And we'll give it a plug at the end of the podcast, of course. But yeah, this is going to be all about Fire Emblem. You and I have both been playing Fire Emblem. You've played a lot. I've played about 15 hours. How much time have you put in?
Okay. So my endgame clock says 36.
Oh, but my gosh.
I would say maybe like 30 of that is real because I left it on for a while not playing it. But yeah, it's still like at least 30 hours. So yeah, I put it in a good chunk into this game so far. But the ironic part is that I'm the furthest behind of my group of friends. Like, all my other friends are further ahead than me.
Oh, my
so
God.
I'm slacking, quote unquote.
All right. So for this podcast, we're going to try to avoid spoiler stuff, I think. I think that's best because the game is still pretty fresh. I don't think most people have gotten too far into the late game stuff so far, or mid game. I guess 30 hours would probably be considered mid game.
I'm not even sure about that now.
I don't know. At 15 hours, I feel like I'm still at the tutorial level. But
right.
But I guess we can sort of start off. What are your general impressions of Three Houses? I should tell people you're a series veteran, right? Like, maybe give people your background on Fire Emblem.
Right. So I came into Fire Emblem with a Path of Radiance on the GameCube, which was a hell of an entry point considering Path of Radiance of the localized Fire Emblem games. Is one of the hardest Fire Emblem games out there, followed by Radiant Dawn, the sequel, which was my second Fire Emblem game. And so I fell in love with those games immediately. They were brutally difficult, but it was so rewarding to put together a tactic and follow through and it to work and for you to finally make it through one of those tough moments. And so since then, I've gone back and played the older games, so Sacred Stones, the original Fire Emblem. Of course, played all the modern ones, Awakening Phase, Shadows of Valencia. Basically, I played all localized Fire Emblem games, including the terrible, terrible Shadow Dragon game on DS. I have not played any of the games that have not made it out of Japan. So none of the fan patches or anything like that, just the officially localized games.
All right, so for everybody's frame of reference, and if you listen to this podcast, you know I'm not a big RPG guy, although I do play them occasionally. I'm definitely not a big story and video games guy, and we'll get to that later, I'm sure. So I don't have a favorite Fire Emblem, but what is your, since you've played so many of them, which one would you consider to be the best Fire Emblem?
Right, so Three Houses, which we'll definitely get into, like, is very, very quickly rising up the ranks and is very, very likely to take the top spot by the end. But seeing as I haven't finished it, I can't say that outright. But Radiant Dawn would probably be my favorite currently. The story just absolutely blew me away in that game, especially one of the twists later on. And the combat and the map designs and the objectives were so tightly designed for very because in Radiant Dawn, unlike other Fire Emblem games, all the characters had linear progressions through their classes. Like, you're early on in Three Houses, but you already know how all the characters can go through.
Oh,
can
it's
class out. Yeah.
Confusing as hell to me, but
right,
there's a lot of ways you can go.
Yeah, exactly. So in Radiant Dawn, each character had only one progression path. And I feel like because of that, the developers were really able to hone in and know exactly what players are going to be working with on any given map. And because of that, they were able to make really, really tight map designs. And I liken it sort of to From Software's Dark Souls to Sekiro, because Dark Souls, you have all the various ways you can play, but Sekiro, there's only one kind of way they can play, and they were able to hone it in for those skill sets. So it was very similar in that regard. And it was just a very, very satisfying game to get through. And there's a funny anecdote, or not anecdote, but story behind Radiant Dawn, in that when it came out, the localization screwed up a little bit with the difficulty levels, in that normal, what was translated as normal difficulty was actually the hard difficulty. And what was translated as the easy difficulty was actually the normal difficulty. And me, like everyone else, didn't know that when it first came out. And so a lot of people chose normal at first, and we just got our asses handed to us because it was actually hard. But I beat it on normal, which was actually hard. So when I found out about that years down the line, I'm like, oh, well, that's why that game was so brutal. Maybe it would have been better if I played it on what was actually normal. So yeah, that will always hold a special place in my heart. And but like I said, Three Houses is definitely giving it a run for its money.
Fire Emblem can be, in my limited experience, it can be a very brutal game. I did play some of Awakening, but I got distracted and never ended up going back to it. I think I maybe got 10 hours into Awakening.
And which in Fire Emblem time, that's like the tutorial.
Yeah, exactly. I was definitely early on in the game, and I was already noticing at the time that it was that I was going to start struggling with it. And I played Classic because that's how everybody said that you should play, and that was the right way to play. And it's extremely stressful when you're worrying about losing people.
Right.
So I can't tell you that I am playing casual because I'm not so familiar with strategy games.
That's...
So.
Totally fine, yeah. I do think adding in the casual mode for Fire Emblem was the absolute right decision on Intelligent Systems' part, because that was one of the reasons the series was so inaccessible, because they were so brutal. And as the game industry grew and there were just more games vying for your attention, if a game was too hard for someone, then they didn't have the time or resources to really put in the effort to get really good at it. And so they would just move on to something else. So putting in the casual mode for people to just enjoy the game for what it is, come to their level, was an absolute right decision. I never judge anyone for choosing casual mode, because as long as they can enjoy the game, that's what matters.
Exactly. And I definitely still approach Three Houses from a sense of I don't want to lose anybody. And outside,
right.
I'm not embarrassed to admit this, but I did lose somebody in the very first group battle, not the tutorial battle where you're just, I don't think we're spoiling anything here, but where you protect the three
right.
house leaders. Obviously, I didn't lose anybody during that because that was almost impossible. But
yeah.
The very first kind of, and I don't think you could technically lose somebody because this was just sort of an inter-house training exercise. So I couldn't have technically. That's the only time that I've died. Otherwise, I have approached every battle as if I might lose somebody and have done my best to keep that from happening. And I have yet to lose somebody. I guess I'm through chapter 5 or month 5. I'm not sure how they're really doing this, but. So very early on, obviously, but I'm going to try to play the rest of the game that way. All right, so you're putting this as one of the best already. Why don't you go into what elements of the game, before we get to story, I think we can maybe do story secondary, but what have you noticed about the gameplay of this Fire Emblem that stands out for you?
Right, so of course one of the major additions for this game is the academy setting. Mm-hmm. And something that I've always thought about is how whenever there's a school setting or a military academy in a game, it's usually not the most creative of bunches. Like school settings in general, especially in anime kind of inspired things, is known as the graveyard of creativity. And so games such as Valkyria Chronicles 2, Final Fantasy Type Zero, those games took place in a military academy, and they didn't really, it was home to a lot of tropes, and it was just kind of there floating around. It didn't provide anything to the story. Even one of the most well-known examples being Persona 5, which is extremely, extremely well-received game that takes place in a high school. But the high school itself doesn't actually provide anything. The high school is just there simply for the fact that kids that age in modern-day Tokyo have to go to school. There's no way around that. So, like, it's there as a necessity. So whereas in Fire Emblem, this military academy, it's set in a fantasy world. There's nothing necessary about this academy. There's nothing that says about the setting that, okay, you're in a fantasy setting, you have to have this school now. It's like, no. So they consciously chose this, and they went full hog with everything a school setting has to offer. So just, first of all, the fact that the monastery is absolutely sprawling. There's so much to explore in it. And there's so much life going on involved in it as well. One of the nice little touches I like about it is like the owls flying around, or if you look up, you can see Pegasus Knights flying around, yes, or the Wyvern Knights.
All of the dogs and cats too
that you can't pet. And nope. I'm very upset about that.
You run right through them. You'll clip right through them, actually.
Yeah, exactly. That was the first thing I tried. I was like, oh, a dog, I'm going to go pet it. And you just walk right through it.
They just bark at you. That's all.
Yeah. And so, being able to eat with your students, being able to sing with your students, or just bond and spend time with them, because that's something that Fire Emblem, another thing Fire Emblem has always been really big about, is just getting you attached to the characters. And in previous games, that was always just done through various support conversations, and that was it. And the support conversations were great, but in this game, you're interacting with them constantly in the academy, and you're getting to know them beyond just what they're saying in the support conversations. You see how they react to all the events happening around them. You see them get sad and happy about the most mundane things. And that brings so much life into it. And that's before we get into like all the various changes to the combat as well. I'll just like pause there and see if there's anything you want to interject about. Yeah.
Well, I will say that the monastery setting, the school setting, is what gave me the most cause for concern or trepidation, right, I would say, about entering this game, because I am not an RPG guy, and I was a little worried, yeah, about all the talking that I was going to have to go through and all the little micromanaging.
Oh, yeah.
When they started detailing all those activities that you can do, like you say, having dinner with people, you can cook dinners with people, you can go to choir practice,
yeah,
you can garden. And you can do training ground stuff. There's all sorts of things to do. And in addition to tutoring your students and providing group activities for them. And I just thought I was going to be absolutely overwhelmed with this, and I was going to find it boring, because I'm not that. Generally, I don't like reading dialogue boxes. And we should say, mm-hmm, that everything's fully voiced, so you don't have to read the
dialogue
boxes.
Right, which is very impressive. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And actually, the voice acting is very good.
Yeah.
I am shocked at how interested. So we early on had a little small exchange on Workplace, our, mm-hmm, site-wide chat, area that we were talking about. I had mentioned my concern about this, and I was hoping that it would be kind of an Animal Crossing-like thing, where I would sort, right, of get into the daily routine of it. And that is exactly what has happened. I'm shocked at how invested I have become in my team, my class, my house.
Absolutely.
And the characters in it. And though I still have no idea what the story is 15 hours in,
yeah,
I don't really know what the main plot is, what it's building towards. It's kind of like a soap opera, but the characters are all, for the most part, very interesting. Yes, there are a couple of duds in I, by the way, chose the Black Eagles, and there are a couple of duds in there, but for the most part, I really, really like these people, and I have enjoyed all the hands-on tutoring. You are given the option to auto-teach everybody, mm-hmm, but I have not done that, and I have never been tempted to do that, because I actually enjoy going through and picking out every single individual thing because of the conversations,
absolutely,
that happen. There's, yeah, so many different conversations, and they actually are fairly interesting, and that's what surprised me so much. There's a lot of depth of character here, and even though I wouldn't necessarily say where I'm at that the story intrigues me at all, the people populating this world really do.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it out. Like, the story, it does take a while to get going, but until then, it's very, very character-driven. You get so attached to your house so quickly. It's impressive. And I can't think of another game where first impressions of a character are so important, because they make you choose your house really early.
Yeah.
Like, I thought going to this game is like, okay, you'll have, like, maybe a battle or two where you take control of each house, and then they'll make you decide after that. Like, no. You're choosing right now, basically, like within the first hour or two of the game, after you've had a single conversation with each of the characters, optional conversations at that.
That's right.
And, yeah.
You can go and talk to everybody, so you can figure out who are the interesting personalities and do I want to hang with these people for the next 80 hours. And, you know,
right,
what's funny to me is, and maybe this has happened for you as well, which house did you choose, by the way? I know the question.
So I chose the Golden Deer.
Golden Deer, right. Yeah. And so I was very close to choosing the Golden Deer because I love the idea of the alliance that they, the lesser alliance that they're part of, where there is no ruler and it's instead a confederation of different nobles. But I ended up going the Black Eagles because I liked Edelgard from the first. I kind of liked her sort of contrarian attitude. What's interesting to me, though, is that the characters that I originally, when I went and talked to everybody, and I talked to everybody before I chose my house.
Absolutely, yeah.
The characters I thought were going to be interesting are actually not the ones that I've grown attached to. So that I've kind of enjoyed. Like, Edelgard is fine, but as I've gone on with the story, she's not really, so far, she's not what I would put, you know, among the top five even. There are some of the side characters that I thought were going to be boring that have had super weird quirks, and I love kind of fueling those quirks and seeing where they go.
So, like, who's your favorite right now?
Bernadette is by far my favorite. She's great. I mean, that's talking about the weirdest character in the whole game, or at least for she must be. She must be close to the weirdest.
I'm trying so hard to recruit her into my own house right now. Like, I am courting her so hard, which that's a whole other system that we'll get into later, I guess.
Impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you court Bernadetta? This is a girl that locks herself in a room and is scared to talk to every single thing. I mean, she's hilarious. Every single support conversation I have absolutely loved with her involved. But there are some other people, too. So Bernadette is great. I like Petra. She's this girl who's from another kingdom that, like, doesn't actually speak the same language as everybody. So she's constantly messing up the idioms. It's fantastic. But there's that's been my experience. Have you – now, Claude is the leader of the Golden Deer, right?
Right, yeah.
So have you been drawn to pretty much who you thought you were going to be?
Yes and no, like you. So there were some characters like Raphael, kind of. I knew immediately that I would just love him. He's just like an all-around nice guy. Raphael is just this big, burly, macho man with a shirt that's way too small for him that's about to explode at any given moment. And he just wants everyone to be happy. And it's so just invigorating to watch him interact with all the characters. Meanwhile, he's always talking about how he's hungry. He just wants to eat some meat, which I can relate to.
I'm trying to recruit him. I like him quite a bit.
Yeah, he's awesome. And one of the surprise character of the whole house that really caught me off guard is Marianne. And so Marianne is this very recluse character in a different way from Bernadetta. Like, Bernadetta locks herself in her room and doesn't like interacting with people, but
she just completely freaks out at everything.
Yeah, she freaks out, yeah. Whereas Marianne is very quiet and just has no self-confidence in herself and has severe crippling social anxiety. And the thing with her is that she is an adoptive daughter for this count in the kingdom. And in the kingdom, or her father is this very robust, great public speaker, great person to be around. And so she feels this pressure to be like him, even though she's not his real daughter. And every single one of her support conversations is just heart-wrenchingly sad. Like, I just feel my soul just drain from my body every time I watch one of her conversations. And one of my favorites is one with Sylvain. And I think you may have gotten Sylvain because he's a freebie recruit character. You just need to talk to him and he'll join. But
I didn't get him. I mean, I've talked to him quite a bit. I actually haven't tried to recruit him, I don't think.
Yeah.
Sylvain is like the kind of the he's a skirt chaser, as he was described by somebody.
Yeah, exactly. So he's actually a gimme character. If you just say recruit, he'll join you, no problem.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So
I do that because I actually like him. But
he's another surprise character because I normally don't like skirt chasers. But this is what solidified me to like him, is that he kind of came to Marianne and he started off with his kind of like flirtatious personality, but it kind of eased in. It's like, no, like, there's no reason you should be so down on yourself. You should have more confidence in yourself. You are a beautiful lady, blah, blah, blah. And it was just a very sweet thing to watch. But the whole time, Marianne's just putting herself down. It's like, no, I'm not worth it. I shouldn't be here. People shouldn't worry about me. I'm just like, oh, sweetie, I want to give you a hug so badly. And so watching her grow through the various supports along the way is just such a satisfying feeling, because it's a remarkable character growth on her part. So yeah, those are the highlights in the Golden Deer for me, along with Claude. Claude is just kind of like this sarcastic, snarky kind of guy that kind of jokes around and has some dark humor here and there. It's nice.
I like him. I think what surprised me most about the writing in this, and like I say, I haven't really 15 hours in, and I couldn't tell you what the story's about. So the writing there, I'm not so sure. But the character writing is full of shades. And what you're, how you're describing Sylvain, how initially he might come off as this shallow, like he's described by a character as a skirt chaser. So he comes off as very shallow at first. And a lot of the characters do. There were characters. There's a character named Casper that I thought was just an idiot.
Oh, yeah.
On my, but when you actually get into these support conversations, everybody has a very, very strong backstory, and you start to understand their personalities a lot better. They aren't as shallow as they initially appear, and there are hints at so many things, by the way. Like everybody has hints left and right of something. It keeps me guessing. I feel like a detective trying to figure out how they're going to be involved in the future. Like there's one guy on my team named Hubert who is, I swear he's going to be evil eventually. but I'm not quite sure because he keeps in support conversations, he drops lines that make me reconsider whether he truly will be evil or if I'm meant to think that he will be evil and then eventually he will do something heroic and redeem himself. I don't know. But I love that about it, that I can't, these people feel like they're fuller than most video game characters that I have encountered. And that's really, that drives my motivation to actually do a lot of these tasks, like having dinner with people and raising their motivation and getting those support encounters, you know, finding their lost items and returning them and doing everything I can to see as many of these support conversations as I can.
Definitely. And something else that I really find impressive with the support conversations is the amount of world building they do, because as far as travel goes, you are in the monastery and that's it. For the most part, like you go out to battles, but those are consolidated maps. They're instance based. But through the support conversations, you learn all about the world, the various politics happening in it. And I thought for sure I was going to get lost in all the kind of noble house names and so on and so forth getting thrown around, because there is a lot of politics going on in three countries. And there's still some of that to some extent. But I am really surprised when someone says, like, oh, he came on the recommendation of House Ordelia. I'm like, oh, that's Lysithia's father's house. And she might know something. I go talk to her, and she'll be like, yeah, I had no idea about this guy. I don't know, blah, blah, blah. And it's freaking me out, and so on and so forth. And it paints this really detailed picture of, or I should say, more say, like, roadmap, I guess, of the politics happening in each of the countries without actually seeing them firsthand. And I think that's really impressive to do.
That's a good point. The exposition isn't just laid out in front of you. For the most part, it's very cryptic. You are left to figure some of it out on your own. You can either choose to do this or you can choose not to do it, depending on how involved you want to get. If you go around and talk to everybody, you're going to have that picture filled in, but you still are required to extrapolate a little bit from that and figure out what the relationship of all these different countries are. There was, I mean, the other day, just yesterday, I learned something shocking about Petra that I would never, that should also be said. This game doesn't spare some of the brutalities of,
oh man,
of life. So you will, even though there's this very lighthearted feel to the monastery and the school atmosphere, for the most part, I mean, unless you're talking to Rhea, in which case things get serious, grim, very fast. But, there's stuff buried beneath the surface that can be disturbing at times, which is great in a way. And it works with the light atmosphere because everybody's trying to band together, but they're fighting these pasts that they have.
Exactly. That's a great way of putting it. I remember one of Lysithia's conversations. She ended, the last line she said after the character had walked away is like, it's not like I have much time left in this world anyway. It's like, what's that supposed to mean? What's that? What? You can't just drop that?
Right. Yeah, and then you want to save them, right? And then you got to see the next one. You got to be like, wait a second, where is this going? I need to know where this is going because I have to try to change it in some way if I can.
So it's so important that you get attached to these characters, because otherwise it would be such a grind going through these daily tasks day in and day out, because they are necessary for the gameplay itself. You're not just doing it for the story. You're getting stat benefits. You're getting proficiencies to qualify for other classes and so on and so forth. And so if you ignore all of those completely, you're going to have a rough time when it comes to actually playing the game. So it's nice that they make you care about it more than just the numbers going up in the background.
That's right. And it makes even money. Like, the fishing is really, it's a mini game that isn't really that involved, but I never really think about some of the how shallow some of the little mini games are. You know, gardening, there's nothing involved really. You just show up and plant your seeds and then harvest later on. And the fetch quests, that's essentially what lost items are, or finding gifts and giving gifts. All that stuff is very, very mundane until it becomes involved with these characters. And then all of a sudden there is meaning to it and you want to do it. So, I mean, I don't know about you, but every time, all right, so after, obviously we can discuss, you know, how the week works. Really, you're only involved in 2 days unless there's something special going on in one of the days. So it's just Monday and Sunday. Sunday is your free day and you're allowed to either explore the monastery, battle, or attend a seminar. And there's probably one other thing that I'm missing.
Oh, those are the three, yeah.
Yeah, the big, yeah. Those are the big things, right? And then you can also take your class examinations that day, certifications, if you want to. But those don't actually take up any time. So yeah, the things that will take up your day that you have to decide between is the exploring, the battling, which is just training. So there's either side quests, battles, or just straight up training battles. Because they don't really have paralogues in this, right? I guess the side quests maybe are paralogues, but.
The paralogues come later.
Oh, they
You're,
do.
you'll
Okay.
you'll get to them, yeah. And they are very worth it, let me tell you.
Oh,
Okay,
okay. All right.
I won't go into it further than that.
All right. So they will. All right. But yeah, so those are the things that take up your day, and you have to decide between that. A seminar. I don't know about you. I think I've done one seminar, but rest. Rest was the other thing, which is
Oh
just
yeah,
basically
that's right. I've not done rest at all, yeah.
me. I haven't done it at all. Like, there's other ways to restore your students' motivation, and
Yeah.
especially at the beginning, you only have a limited number of students you can teach, so it's really easy just to restore the motivation of the people you want to
Exactly.
teach, and then go on. Maybe later on I'll consider it more. But yeah, so exploring the monastery, there's just a bunch of things that you can do. And I don't know about you, but I take my time to explore the full monastery, and I love
Definitely.
it, and I shouldn't, because it is essentially just fetch quest stuff. Like, you're exploring the same ground, but at the same time, it's helping me get to know the monastery. It's making it feel like a place that I belong in, that I get to know the people, I get to know the grounds, and I scour every inch of it for items that might get involved in lost and found kind of thing, or whatever, or any sort of just bonuses that you pick up, you know, pick up plant seeds or something like that. I don't care. Or if it's a fish, I mean, whatever, then that'll help me cook something later on that might give me a stat boost for the whole month. I can't believe I'm talking like this. You don't know me that well, but I'm not an RPG guy.
I'll ask you that question later about like why you came to this game, but I'll let you finish your thought first, yeah.
Yeah, so I definitely explore every inch once a month for sure. And then I'll generally, for at least 1 week out of the month, I will do battles. I'll just and this game allows you to do those battles over and over if you want to, if you're playing on normal difficulty anyway, like I am.
Right. I was gonna say caveat is on hard. The infinite one is not there. You only have the AP limited one
Right.
for hard. So you can't infinitely grind on hard, but
Yeah.
normally you can.
So people that aren't used to games like this, like me, I grind a little bit, and thus when I reach the end of the month and we have our big mission, because you get one big story mission per month, then when I reach the end of the month, I feel a lot more comfortable about entering those battles without, you know, again, I am tr even though I know I'm playing casual and I won't lose anybody, I don't want to play that way. I want to play as if I could lose somebody. So
Right.
the goal for me is always just to build up my guys. I don't go overboard. I try to keep it at least somewhat challenging. And you know, honestly, when you do these battle missions during the month, they're usually a couple levels ahead of where I am anyway. So the first time I do one of these battle missions, side battles, I always have to be very careful because the enemy is usually more powerful than me.
Yeah, I was very surprised the first time I did one of those side battles. I'm like, wait a minute, these guys are double attacking me. What's going on?
Right?
This is kind of dangerous.
Yeah,
So yeah.
you have to be good, and then you could gain a few levels on them, and then the next time you go back, you'll be do much better. You can blow through it a little bit faster. But I found it has helped. I haven't felt as worried when I've approached the story missions, and for me, that's a good thing. So yeah, how I got it? I bought this basically because I like the idea of Fire Emblem, and I always wanted to get into the series. And honestly, I thought that I this year I have been trying a lot of new genres that I never really had before, and that brought me to Fire Emblem. I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this a go. From what I've been hearing, this was an accessible one, and I can state to anybody out there who hasn't played Fire Emblem that is the case. It may seem overwhelming at first. I'm not a stats guy. I'm not a buffs guy. I never really got into that even when I played RPGs of old, like Final Fantasy VI. I usually just would grind until I would reach a high enough level and could power through somebody. But I am finding it eases you in. It seems very overwhelming right at first, but then all of a sudden that goes away because it starts to ease you in. It won't let you get in over your head. And I very much appreciated the way the game kind of introduces every mechanic, even though you think you have all these things available to you all at once, and you're like, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to do? And you're agonizing over certain decisions. Do I explore the monastery today, or do I do a training battle, or what?
Like, imagine if they opened up the entire monastery for you right at the outset of the
Oh my
game. How
gosh.
insane that would be.
And that's great. Like, they block off parts of the monastery, so you can't even access them. And that's they ease you in quite wonderfully. It seems overwhelming for like a second, and then you realize, okay, they're not actually going to let me do everything. And on certain weekends, on certain Sundays, they'll only give you one option at the very beginning. So it's just explore. You won't have the option of going to a battle. They're basically telling you, you need to do this so that you can figure out how all this stuff works. And eventually you do figure out how it works. And yeah, I've found it, if you're a beginner, I would absolutely say this is a good jumping in point, because I'm a beginner and I have found this not only accessible but very, very addicting. I really, really like this game so far.
And I'm very glad to hear that because I was definitely unsure. Because I knew going into this, I was going to love this game. It had my name written all over it. But then it never even occurred to me from the standpoint of newcomers. And it wasn't until like I'd started the game and I was like 10 or so hours into it. I'm like, I've played this game for like 10 hours. I've had two battles. Yeah. And I'm like, on paper, that sounds horrible, especially for a strategy RPG. And so that's when I'm thinking, like, you know what? Maybe. I'm worried because this might not be. Maybe newcomers will come in. It's like, when's the gameplay going to start? Because it is a lot of text. You have that initial tutorial battle in the very beginning. You have the first story battle, and then from then on, it's just like easing you into the monastery, teaching you every little bit, aspect of it, bit by bit. And so I was very, 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 very worried that people would be put off by that. I'm sure some people are going to be put off by it, but hearing your experiences with it, the fact that you did get invested with all the characters, despite not being a story guy or a character person or a text reader. It's incredible. And it can't be understated. Like, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that every single piece of dialogue is fully voiced. And that is exceptionally rare for JRPGs. You have Final Fantasy 15, and that's it off the top of my head, as far as completely 100% fully voiced JRPGs. And so, especially coming from Fire Emblem, which wasn't even really voiced until the game before this, and that was like very, very partial. And so this was a very major step forward in that. It lends so much to getting you invested in the characters, getting you to know their personality and their quirks.
Yeah, and a testament to that is that I listen to every conversation instead of skipping ahead. I mean, you could obviously have that option to read the dialogue and move on as quickly as possible. I actually listen to them because it lends something to their characters. The voice acting is very, very good here and has drawn me in to each character. For like, there might be only two duds in my house, but everybody else I enjoy listening to everything they have to say because the voices really do lend a lot. I'm very surprised by that. This is clearly, since I don't usually get drawn into stuff like that, I have to believe this is top notch because I am getting drawn into it. So they're doing something extremely right and making me want to go back. And I will say, like, okay, yes, there aren't that many battles, it seems like, right? Except it always seems like you're leading up to a battle. They have paced this game perfectly so that it doesn't feel like you're wasting your time. You're training to get ready for that mission at the end of the month, and that mission is an event. That is something I can't wait to get to, but I want to take my time because I want to make sure that I'm ready. And they've done a great job of making it seem like you're preparing for this in a very real way.
Absolutely, yeah. The way the game feeds upon itself, the loop of it all is just incredible. Just the how no matter what you do, you are moving towards something, whether it's raising relationship to raise support levels, or raising weapon or class proficiency so you can get better classes, or raising professor level or anything like that. Every single thing you do, it has some sort of positive feedback that just feels good. And it all leads up to, like you said, that final battle at the end of the month. It's like, okay, it's go time. Let's go I don't know how what the rating for this podcast is, but
well, we're a Nintendo podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go kick some ass, I guess. Yeah.
Yes, that is acceptable Nintendo speak.
Right. And so I just love that, and that's again before we even like touch on the actual combat aspect of it all. Just everything surrounding it is just so finely well tuned. I will say, like, I have two nitpicks. First nitpick is that this isn't really a spoiler, but the weather and the seasons at the monastery never changes the whole year. Like, you get the little History Channel documentaries as the months change, which I love those, they're great. Yeah. And like, you get to winter, it's like, and the hoar frost settles in and blah blah blah, and you're walking around the monastery, it's still like the trees are blooming, it's bright blue skies, like, oh okay, I don't see any snow, but that's fine, that's a nitpick. Other nitpick I will say is that your main player character, even though it's a silent protagonist, I do wish he/she would emote a little bit more, especially coming
mostly
off of...
Mostly silent, right? Because when they gain a level, they say something, so I don't know why.
Right, exactly, yeah. Because I came off of Final Fantasy XIV, which also has a silent protagonist, but at least, like, they emoted a lot in theirs. So even though they were silent, they still kind of had a personality. And this one is just, like, stone-faced, poker-faced the whole time, and maybe, like, they'll look sad occasionally. But that's,
yeah, I chose
that's
the male Byleth. Yeah, I mean, male Byleth is just a rock. He's, You know, they could have, you're right, they could have done that, because the other characters really do emote, and it's not just in their little portraits that pop up in their dialogue boxes. It's actually, they actually emote more, I feel like, on screen, because all these,
absolutely.
We should say that all the support conversations are animated, you know, in real time animated. And so many of the cutscenes are, and the characters really do show a lot of emotion on their face. You know, Link shows emotion on his face. He's a silent protagonist.
Yeah,
they could have
done
a little bit more. That is true. The last thing I want to touch upon, at least for the monastery, is the tutoring. And that is a particular aspect I never would have thought that I would have gotten into, which was going over every character and their goals. Every character has a goal for what they want to do. And you can force them down a path. You can go with what they kind of want to do. And sometimes they will change what they want to do and ask your permission to do so. And you can say yes or no and, you know, kind of mold them into what you want. That is new to a Fire Emblem game, right?
Yeah, it's very new. Well, I shouldn't say new to games in general, because there is, like, the nurturing genre, but absolutely, like, new to Fire Emblem, 100%.
Yeah, and it's actually a fascinating thing going through, because there are times when at first I just simply went the easy route, and I would just I would teach them in the things that they were showing positive results for, right? But there are, now that I've been in it long enough and I'm kind of understanding how all my units work and what kind of fighting I want to do and what kind of people I want to have, I have started building them in things that are going off the beaten path, which is causing them to maybe reconsider what sort of class they want to be or what sort of focus they want to have. And I'm finding that to be very, very fulfilling in a way, because you feel like a teacher.
Absolutely. Like, that's the thing that I love about this game, is that obviously I haven't been a teacher, but it definitely nails that feeling of being a teacher. Just being like, yeah, you may not think you have the potential for this, but I see something in you. I think if we polish this up, you'll have a future in riding horses.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I'm going to build your equestrian skills right now. And, you know, or maybe I'm going to turn, maybe I want somebody to learn magic. You know, there's two different types of magic. There's faith and reason. Maybe I want you to turn into a healer. At least get those skills and have them available to you, because I need another healer on the battlefield. So I think that is very, very interesting. Most teams are fairly well-rounded, and you certainly have the option of doing whatever you want and just following their set paths. Not that they have set paths, but you can follow what they're suggesting, or you can get creative. And I love that, you know, option to get creative.
Yeah, definitely. I remember, so the mage on my team, Lysithia, so
I like her.
She's
by the way.
Very,
I'm
very
a recruiter. I used her she aided me 1 month, and I liked her quite a bit.
Yeah, she's amazing as a unit. But yeah, so like I said, very clearly the mage, but I put some teaching into sword a bit. And she eventually learned a new combat art where it's a sword skill, but it uses her magic stat to attack. And so now she has a sword skill that can hit someone for like 38 damage when she has like 6 strength and it's awesome.
That's amazing.
So it's just things like that. The game rewards you for experimenting, and I love it for that.
Yeah, there's new discoveries left and right in this game. I feel like, and that's, I mean, you're 30 plus hours in. I'm 15 hours in. For me to even be considering moving on with a game like this 15 plus hours in, I consider it a major achievement because I am totally invested at this point because of all the discoveries. There's so many surprises and there's so many new little wrinkles that pop up all the time that not throw a monkey wrench in the works, because I don't want it to sound negative, but it puts a spin on where I thought I was going. And now I'm thinking, whoa, wait a second, maybe I want to go in this direction.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm constantly evaluating, changing the students' goals. Like, okay, let's work on this now. Let's work on that. And then they'll come to me. It's like, Professor, I want to work on this. Like,
sure.
It's hard to deny that request, even if you're thinking, wait a second, I kind of really liked where they were going before.
Because they give really good reasons for why they want to switch to it, too. It's like, oh, okay, fine. You can,
And you grow to like them so much, you're kind of coddling them. They're almost, it's very, very bizarre. I have not had an experience like this in a video game for quite some time. Probably not since Final Fantasy VI, where I cared about individual characters in a certain way. You feel like they're becoming part of your team, man. And if they come to you, you're their leader, and they ask for something, you kind of want to give it to them.
Yeah. It makes me so happy to hear you say that. From a newcomer's perspective, that still makes you feel that way. So great.
For me, it's a fresh experience. I mean, I don't know. All right, so you're coming from a veteran Fire Emblem. Would you say does this kind of reinvigorate the series? Or I don't want to say, I mean, I don't know if it had gone stale in the first place, but I know that Fates wasn't, even though it was considered a good game, a lot of people had their problems with it. A lot of people did like Echoes, from what I remember. Would you say this is kind of like, you know, like, say, Breath of the Wild. Zelda has always been a great series, but Breath of the Wild did something new and fresh for it. Would you say this is kind of the equivalent?
Yes, I was thinking about that before this podcast, and I do absolutely think it takes the series in a very, very bold forward direction, and it's definitely what it needed at this point, because Awakening saved the Fire Emblem franchise. That much is certain, because it was going to die before that. It was not selling well, and it reinvigorated the series. Mm-hmm. And then Fates came along, and it left, like you said, it was a decent game, but it definitely left a sour taste, and especially veteran Fire Emblem's mouths, just the way that it treated its characters and the story. It was just all very basic and kind of demeaning to the player. And then Echoes was great, but it was also a remake of a game, so it wasn't necessarily like a brand new game.
Right.
And so this one, adding in this monastery feature, or not, I can't even call it feature because there's so much going into it, and all the things that happen in the monastery to really get you attached to the characters more than ever in a Fire Emblem game is exactly what it needed. And then on top of that, you have all the changes to the combat system, which I guess is now as good as point as any to launch into that, right?
Yeah, I think we're going to take a quick break here because
and
we'll come back and we'll talk about the combat more in depth. All right, we'll be back in just a little bit.
Honestly, what are you accomplishing with that little stunt? It's like you're trying to get me killed, you fool. Well, it's fine. After all, if you don't know the value of your own life, you're not going to protect it very well, are you? Of course not. Well then, I guess it's up to me to guide you from now on, right? You can call me Sothis, but I'm also known as The Beginning.
Hey everybody, welcome back. All right, so we talked a decent amount. We can't go into story spoilers, but we did talk a decent amount about the characters and story of Fire Emblem, and of course we'll probably sort of in a periphery sense talk about it more, but I do want to go into the combat, the meaty parts of the combat. Now, as somebody approaching this from a perspective of I play a lot of Fire Emblem Heroes, and I really do, for 2 years I've been playing that game like crazy.
Boy, is this different.
Yeah, this is different. This is a little more complex. But so we'll get my perspective on this, but I really want to listen to your perspective, since you're a veteran of the series. How does the combat in Three Houses stack up?
Right. So on the surface, it's very much the same. Obviously, it's still a grid-based strategy RPG, so you're still moving characters across squares and moving them next. Excuse me. and attacking units and so on and so forth. But something not necessarily new, because it was introduced in Echoes in the previous game, but it's been refined more, are the combat arts. And previously in Echoes, combat arts used your MP to use, basically. But that's been changed here to where it now uses your weapon durability. And for those who are unfamiliar, all of your weapons in Fire Emblem have durability to them, and that they have a number of uses before they'll break. And previously in Fire Emblem, when they broke, they'd be unusable. But here you can still use them, but they're pretty weak.
They're crap, and so, is what they are.
They're absolute worthless crap. And so now the combat arts use weapon durability instead. And they use a good chunk of weapon durability, too. So a combat art will usually use between 4 or 5. And you start off with weapons that have, like, 40 or 50 weapon durability, which is fine. But you start getting down to, like, the really good rare weapons. They only have, like, 20 or 25. So you use a five durability combat art, and that's a fourth of your weapon durability, a fourth or fifth of your weapon durability right there. But anyways, what I really like about them is that they're all specific to each character. Like, they're shared across characters, but what each character learns is specific to them. Not everyone's going to learn the same combat arts, and that lends a lot of individuality to each unit, which I really appreciate, because in previous Fire Emblems, units within the same class, they would definitely start to feel very samey. They would just be, they would all function, they would all serve the same function, where that's not necessarily the case here. That also carries over to the magic system, where, again, carrying over from Shadows of Valentia, magic is not an item anymore. So previously in Fire Emblem, magic was a weapon like a spear or sword or anything like that you would have to equip.
You bought now books, magic, right? It was like you bought
books.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, you bought books. You
or
bought
tombs.
Tomes to use.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those would also break. And this magic is learned once again through raising the reason or faith attributes. And they have limited uses. They're cast for free, but they have limited uses in a single battle. And especially in the beginning, they don't have a whole lot of uses.
No.
Because, yeah, you have like 5 uses of fireball and like 3 or 5 uses of heal. It's really not a lot. It really makes you consider, it's like, okay, do I want to use this now or not? The catch is that they are replenished at the end of the battle. So even if you use all of them, by the next battle, they'll be available again. Mm-hmm. But as you start progressing down these magic using classes, they get more and more uses. They have more varied spells, and they really feel like this grand master of magic, which I really appreciate, as opposed to just someone reading a book. But the biggest addition that I am just thrilled to have seen. So you said you're in chapter 5, right?
I basically just foiled a potential heist. Let's put it that way. That shouldn't spoil too much. Within the depths of the monastery. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So this isn't a spoiler, because it's a very critical point to the gameplay. So the next battle, you're going to be introduced to monster encounters, basically.
Ah. Okay.
And monster encounters. So monsters aren't necessarily new to Fire Emblem. They've been in previous Fire Emblem games, but they've just been any other units on the battlefield. They have like claw attacks and fangs, and you just go and kill them, no problem. Monsters in this game, or in this universe, first of all, are not common. They are a very rare occurrence. They are not something you see in everyday life. And because of that, when you encounter one on the battle, they are a thing. They are a very, literally a very big thing, in that they take 4 squares, first of all. They are supersized units. And they are created in such a way that you have to send your entire army to take them down, which is very different from Fire Emblem, because previously you would have boss units, and you've seen some bosses in 3 houses so far, but for the most part, if you had one strong unit, you could just send them in and take it down. Mm-hmm. That's not the case for monsters, because first of all, they have more than one health bar. So far, I've seen one that has, the max I've seen is 3 health bars, and they are very
health
bars. Yeah. They have AoE attacks, very, very damaging AoE attacks that can very, very severely hurt your entire army if you're not careful. Oh. And they have barriers that surround them that will reduce oncoming damage. And so basically, the way that you need to take down these monsters is that you need to break the barriers in each of the 4 quadrants. And one of the ways that you can do that is utilizing your battalions. And that's another new addition to this game. And so battalions are, they're exactly what this sounds. They're units of generic soldiers that you can assign to each of your character's units. And they assign various stat buffs, but they also let you use certain gambits, where you send all of your battalion over to just kind of like bum rush the enemy, set up a bomb or something like that. And it's an introduction of crowd control to Fire Emblem that you haven't seen before, because it affects a wide area, it cripples enemy units, it prevents them from moving. So you use the battalions and these gambits to break down the barriers on these monsters, basically. And each barrier you break will lower the defense of the monster, but it also makes it a lot angrier. So if you don't break all the barriers before it starts attacking, it's going to do some serious damage to you. Once you do break all the barriers, though, the monster is stunned, and you can do some serious damage to it without worrying about retaliating. So that's the thing. If you just send one unit over to fight this monster, at most you'll take down like one barrier, and it's going to retaliate and completely demolish that unit. You need to make a concerted effort to take it down, or at least like severely hurt it in a single turn, so much that you can regroup and retreat afterwards once it comes back up. And it's something completely unheard of for Fire Emblem games and like this, to bring the full brunt of your army to bear against a single enemy like this.
I'm curious about that, because up until this point, I've hired a couple of battalions, but I've only used them for their stat boosts. I haven't done a gambit yet. I haven't felt the need to do a gambit yet. Right. So I'm curious for when it's going to actually force me to do one of these things, and to see how difficult it actually will be for my my squad to go into one of these battles.
Right, definitely. It's. I remember what really saved me was, again, Lysithia and her battalion, because she had a battalion of mages, and so she had a very large AoE gambit that was able to take down three of the barriers at once. And so I just had to take down one barrier after that. But yeah.
I got to save my money and start hiring some more battalions then, sounds
yeah.
like.
it's absolutely invigorating to take down one of these monsters, because it is a serious endeavor to do so, unlike any of the other regular units in the game, even the boss units in the game. Because like I said, the regular bosses, you can just send over one unit and kill them. Typically, you don't want to do that, because I don't know about you, but I will try to soften them up a little bit, then send in one of my lower level units to finish them off to get XP.
Yes,
but
that's the thing.
You
juggle so much when you're doing these battles, especially if you feel like you are in control of a battle. It's one thing when you're not in control. And, you know, I've done a couple of the training battles, the weekend training battles, where I knew that these guys were stronger than me, and I needed to put Byleth, who was my stronger character. You know, my strongest characters had to be out front. They had to absorb blows, and I had to have healers behind them, and I had to use, heal potions and stuff like that. But when you're in control of something, part of the fun of managing these battles is making sure that the characters that haven't leveled up as much get in there and make the killing blows. So you're constantly going back and forth, trying to, like you say, soften somebody up, so that the weaker characters can get in there, start raising their levels, they can get everybody kind of even. I love that sort of management of, 12, or 10 different characters, and trying to make sure that everybody's sort of getting moved along. And again, it's that sort of school-like atmosphere. You're trying to make sure the class all stays together, right? So that you don't have the smart people aren't getting out ahead of the not-so-smart people. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the fighters are not getting out too far ahead of the non-fighters. And so, it'll be interesting to see, like you say, with the bosses, I've never had a problem with those, and they're slightly above just a normal unit. It's not really any big issue. And if you're leveling up at a normal pace, you should be able to handle them. So I'm interested in seeing what happens when I take on one of these monsters where an entire army has to fight it, because I have yet to run into an encounter where I needed an entire army. Most of the time I can take somebody down with one or two units.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's been the case for every single Fire Emblem to date. So this, having these monster type units in is a complete shift in thinking and ideology for a Fire Emblem combat. And I love that. It is such a great addition. I'm terrified for when monster units start becoming more common, or like incorporated into the field more. Because when you first encounter this monster unit, it's just the monster unit. They make sure, again, to ease you into this new system so that you get the hang of it. But I know down the line, there's going to be like three or four monsters on the field on top of like whatever normal enemies, and they're all going to be bum rushing me at the same time. It's going to be chaos. So I'm terrified when that happens, but it's going to be great.
That's why I'm playing casual mode. if I need to kamikaze somebody in there, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
No, I assume that they're always going to give you ways out. I'll just grind. That's what I will do. That's why they have multiple save files, people.
Exactly,
make
yeah.
sure that you can grind up if you need to. So how have you found the map so far?
So the maps, I will say, have been relatively underwhelming in terms of design. They're not too terribly interesting to look at. They're usually just the usual kind of rocky canyons or dark crypts or forests. They do have all their defensive tiles and whatnot, but as far maps and kind of map objectives go hand in hand. And there have been very, very few battles so far where it has not been either A, rout the enemy, or B, defeat the enemy commander. Mm-hmm. And that's rather uninspiring, especially compared to Conquest Fates, which that's the one thing I will give Conquest and Fates. It had very, very interesting maps and it had very, very interesting objectives that weren't just simply rout the enemy or defeat the enemy commander. Maybe those will come later down the line, but I have been wanting a little bit more than just, okay, let's just go kill everyone or just focus down that one guy, except I never just focus him down. I make sure to kill everyone anyways, because that's XP.
Yes, exactly. Why would you waste a single enemy?
Yeah, exactly. So I am hoping a little more of those mechanics come into play down the line.
Yeah, there are definitely... I'm not a veteran, so I wouldn't be able to compare really. But there are a couple of maps that I liked early on. There are some that had multiple pathways for the enemies, and you could either choose to retreat or advance forward. I do like how they tempt you to go to do things a certain way, but if you're, you know, you could be too cautious and get cornered, or you can plow ahead too far and divide your units, and you just have to be sort of careful about who you send in which direction, you know,
right,
making sure that there's a good mix of strong and weak people if you're going to split everybody up.
That does remind me of another addition that I'm in love with as well. The aggro lines, the target lines of enemies that appear when you move. Yeah, because those are completely new to Fire Emblem as well. Because before in Fire Emblem, whenever you moved a unit into enemy range, you would have to guess who was going to attack. And you could more or less be able to tell if you sent in your healer, they're of course going to target your healer.
Yep.
But there are other times where a lot of your strategy would be based, okay, I'm assuming he's going to attack this enemy, but I don't know for sure. And so having those aggro lines to say, okay, if I put Hilda here, that arch is going to attack her because she can't counterattack. That means I can move this person over here and this, and you can set up these really intricate formations that you couldn't in previous Fire Emblem games because you just didn't have that information.
You can strategize exactly. If somebody's got to take a hit, then they have to take a hit. But at least you can put the person in place that you want to take that hit. And it's interesting because before, it seems like, like I said, I played a little bit of Awakening. And from what I remember, you could always see at least the reach of your enemy's, attack.
Yeah.
But you, like you say, you didn't know who was going to actually attack who. So you sort of had to guess. And sometimes you would just edge the perimeter of that attack zone. And you try to, you knew somebody was going to take a hit, so you put your strong people out there. But in this particular case, because you know exactly who is going to attack who, you can manipulate that, and you can change their minds. You can force them to attack somewhere else and draw them away and reposition everybody exactly how you want it. I really do like that way of doing it. It seems like it's just more involving in the strategy department when it comes to figuring out how you're going to advance all your troops on the goal. Mm-hmm.
And I was definitely worried because they had announced that feature before the game came out. So I saw that. I'm like, I'm not sure about that. That might make things too easy. And yes, it makes things easier, but also it makes it so much more satisfying when you pull off a strategy. So when you meticulously put together a strategy and it works, it makes it so much more satisfying. So I'm completely in love with that as well.
To me, it's just another element of how they engage you. And that's, I think, the number one thing that this game does at every step of the way is it engages you in some way. It makes you think about choices constantly. It's just choice after choice after choice. And to me, that's just another way of them doing that on the battlefield. And you already were making choices on the battlefield, but this just increases the amount of ways that you feel like you can directly impact the situation. And that's always a good thing in video games. And since the battles don't come constantly, you're not just moving from battle to battle. That I think that was a very smart idea because it makes them really count. And some of these battles can, I imagine that I haven't faced anything overly long at this point, but I'm assuming that later on these things are going to get like half an hour or possibly more at a time.
Yeah. There's definitely an ebb and flow to it. That's very nice. There's highs and there's lows. It lets you rest because the battles can get stressful and you don't. That was definitely the case in Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn, where it was just battle after battle after battle after battle. And it was very stressful in that case. But having that downtime to spend with your students in between, it really gets you reinvigorated for what's to come again.
It does, and I've never felt like there was too big of a gap. That's a huge testament to what they've done with the monasteries, that I've never felt like, okay, when am I going to finally get back to doing a battle again? I've never felt like that, and that's a big, big thing. And then when I'm in the battles, I'm totally engaged, and I feel like I'm fresh, almost like I've rested up, and my motivation is increased. You know,
so, yeah, exactly.
I'm right in there, and I can't wait to get involved, and I'm locked in, zeroed in for every battle. I don't feel like there's anything monotonous about it. It really does come across like an event. And I find they do a really good job as a newcomer. They do a really good job of teaching the tactics. The weapons triangle thing that's been ingrained in me from Fire Emblem Heroes, where the tactics are, you know, to survive a 30-second battle.
Right. Yeah. So actually, did you know that the weapon triangle is absent in this game?
It's absent, and yeah. Although it exists in some kind of like fake, well, not fake, I don't want to say that, but in a different sort of form. Like there are combat arts that are definitely like some enemy types, enemy classes are weak against. So there is an element of it, but it's not
omnipresent like it used to be.
Right, and I think archers are still powerful against Pegasus Knights, right? And there are a couple of things, but it's not so dependent. Yeah, it's not like, you know, if you've got, you know, a lance that you're, what was it? Sword beats axe beats
sword
lance.
Sword beats axe, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, lance beats sword. Yeah, that's not going to be present anymore. So I actually don't miss it at all. I mean, I feel like, you know, the weapons triangle thing might have just been put people on autopilot sometimes. This forces me to really think about who I'm sending in and why. There are certain things like, okay, you're not going to send your archer against an armored knight because they're going to do nothing. So you do have to send people in with an understanding of who's going up against who. But yeah, it doesn't feel like it's just so, I don't know, on autopilot as the weapon triangle. Yeah, routine.
It was funny because as a veteran, even though I knew there wasn't the weapon triangle, I was still like, instinctually setting swords against axes against lances. And it wasn't until like three or so battles in, I'm like, why am I doing this? I don't need to do that. Yeah.
And it can ruin you sometimes if you do it automatically just because it's on reflex. There are times when you're going to send somebody in there and they're going to get walloped. They're going to take a big hit because they were not meant to go up against that person. But yeah, but that does add, at least, I know there have been a couple of combat arts. There's a helm splitter is one, for instance, that a sword user might have that will take down an armored person. And magic users still blow away armored people. Like that's...
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. So satisfying.
Oh, it totally is. And some of those do still work, you know, which is great. I mean, other than that, like as far as combat goes, it is, I feel like it's... They've eased me in well enough. I've never felt overwhelmed, and I think they give you enough chances to grind. I think that's the huge, the big important thing here is if you feel like you're underpowered, just create a separate save file, test out the battle, see where you are. If you're not good, go back and grind a little bit on those battles, and your characters will raise their levels fast enough. And up until this point, I have not felt the need to grind as a new a new player. And even though I am playing on casual, I have not lost anybody. So I consider, like I said, I consider myself playing on classic. I'm just not. I think it does ease you in well enough that you can understand all the systems. Some of it's going to go over my head. Veterans are obviously, you're going to be able to take more out of this than I am. But I am able to get along just fine. And that's the important part. Not only get along, but actually really, really enjoy it. So I don't feel like treading water here and hoping to stay afloat. I feel like I am getting a really good hold on all of the systems. It could be better. There are certain things that, sure, I don't understand, but I also don't feel like it's absolutely vital that I understand. I feel like that the people who do understand are going to wring every last drop of, you know, efficiency out of it. And maybe I'm not the most efficient battler out there, but it is allowing me to play my way as long as I play my way smart. And which is very, very satisfying. Like, I don't feel like anything's spinning out of control yet. We'll see what happens when I fight one of the monsters.
Yeah, but... yeah, exactly. There's not like an invisible hand saying, you should do it this way, otherwise you're a naughty boy.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That. It's just like, do what you want.
Yep, and as long as you make good moves, you know, smart moves, then you'll be fine. And you know, just don't rush anybody right into battle. Just don't send people out willy-nilly. just keep them packed together, make sure that you got a lot of support. And that's the other thing, like, keep people close together, keep building that support, because you're going to want to hear those support conversations. You want,
yes,
when you open up the menu and you see that little notification next to support, you want to see a ton of little dialogue boxes next to all those people.
Oh, yeah. And something else I just want to add really quick, too, is even if you do, if you were absent-minded for a moment, you make a stupid mistake and someone dies, like, you do have the Divine Pulse feature that lets you rewind time turn, so you can go back and redo that move. So not all is lost if you make one stupid move.
I forgot about that. I have yet to use it so far, but, you know, again, I'm early on. I am sure I will be making use of that sometime in the future.
I've used it a couple times. We're like, why did I think that was dumb? Yeah, so it's it's great that, like, whereas in previous, I'd have to, like, hard reset my console and start over. It's like, no, I can just, like, finish the map now instead. So that's nice.
Yep, it's definitely a quality of life thing. I think they've done a really good job with a ton of quality of life things in this. And as far as, like, all the different menu things, like, just explore. That's the other thing. Explore and see what stuff does. You can rarely mess anything up, even if you try out different things over the course of the month with all of your teaching and, you know, picking to explore the monastery or take a seminar. You know, just see, try everything at least once, see what you think about it. You never have to do it again if you didn't feel like you got a benefit out of it. There's so many different things that you can do. I like that they give you all those options. You can figure out for yourself what you want. And if you want to skip a lot of that, go right ahead. I didn't, which I am absolutely, I'm delighted that it didn't turn out to be that way, because I wasn't sure about this game. I didn't go in any negative way. I went in with an open mind because I wanted to like a Fire Emblem game. But I was still surprised, nevertheless, at how engaged I have been in this game. So I have no doubt, as long as I'm mentally capable, I will see this game through, even through 80 hours, because right now it's engaging me that much.
I'm delighted that you're delighted.
All right. Well, I think that about does it. We both really like this game. If you guys haven't tried Fire Emblem Warriors, if you were on the fence about it, or Warriors, Fire Emblem Warriors.
that's not a game either of us have played, I'm pretty sure.
I have played that game. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it to a certain extent. I did like that game, but it's a totally different kind of game. Fire Emblem Three Houses, if you're on the fence about it, if you think it's going to be overwhelming, I can definitely say give it a shot if you are so able, if you have the time and I shouldn't even say patience. I never had to be patient with this game. It's engaged me from pretty much the get-go. And sounds like you, as a series veteran, you would recommend this to Fire Emblem fans?
Right, absolutely. As a veteran, if you were, for whatever put off, whatever reason put off by Fates or recent Fire Emblem games, this is the revitalization of the series that we've been waiting for. It makes so many interesting choices you never would have thought would fit in a Fire Emblem game, but they made it fit so organically, so naturally, and it just feels good. And I am just so pleased that Fire Emblem is a topic of conversation again in a positive manner. It's not just the waifu wars, the husbando wars, or anything like that. It's like people are talking about because they really like this character for who they are, not just because they had this tropey personality or because of the pairings. Mm-hmm. And because the combat's good. So I'm just over the moon delighted about this game.
Yeah, it really is good. I'm surprised at how much I like it. I'm glad that I picked it up and gave it a shot. And I would highly recommend anybody who is able to and has any inclination to do the same thing. It's definitely worth it. I think this is going to go down for sure as one of the better games of the year for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And this is just the start for the Switch, too. Oh, man.
I know. This is going to be a
couple of months are insane.
Rough second half of the year for people's wallets.
Yep.
I've got to get through this thing before Astral Chain comes out.
I know.
All right. Well, that should about do it for the podcast. I think we were able to talk for an hour about this game, and honestly, I could have even gone and even
longer. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So I'm surprised we went this long, yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So, Matt, where can we find you online?
Yeah. So, like we said in the beginning, I'm the anime editor for Goomba Stomp, so you can find me on that section there. We also have our own podcast called Anime Ichiban. We are on Podbean, iTunes, our very own Goomba Stomp. We're working on getting on other platforms as well. So if you're a fan of anime, definitely get that a listen to. And besides that, you can find me on Twitter at MusingMojack, MusingMojack.
Yeah, it sounds like your podcast is doing really well. I've noticed there's been a lot of commenters on it, so you guys are definitely gaining a following on this thing for sure.
Right, yeah. It, I think it helped that we finally got on iTunes. I finally got off my lazy ass and went through that whole process. So that's nice.
And as for me, you can always find me, of course, on GoombaStomp, writing about video games, as well as as movies. I am the editor of the film section, Sorted Cinema. I also tend to write more movie articles than video game articles. And you should definitely check out, we just wrapped up our coverage of the Fantasia Film Festival up in Montreal.
So much.
Oh,
so
my
much.
God. I think by the end of this thing, we're going to have 50 movie reviews. And I highly doubt that any publication at all will have covered this festival as well as we did. I'm sure that Rick will have a lot to say when we get back, or when he gets back to the show. We may do a podcast, a one-off podcast about it with some of the other guys, the writers that were covering it with us, that we had four people in Montreal, and then I was reviewing screeners from home. We did a lot. So if you're interested in genre movies from across the world, definitely check out some of the Fantasia reviews. We really did find some good movies there. I thought it was a decently strong showing for the festival.
Right. I've just been skimming some of the articles here and there, but there's a lot of interesting things coming out, it seems like.
Yeah. And hopefully you'll be able to see some of these too. Hopefully most of them will make their way to North America. Some of them we know will. So definitely at least a good chunk of those will make their way. Some of them even into theaters. There were some decent premieres there, but hopefully some of the other ones will as well. We'll see, because there were some really good ones in there. I reviewed a movie from China that I thought was absolutely fantastic called Shadow. So anybody check that out. It's kind of like one of those kingdom epics, ancient kingdom epics. It was very good. All right. So that should about wrap it up. We will be back next week. Maybe I'll talk more Fire Emblem Heroes. I am sure I will have more Bernadette.
Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Three Houses. I went from Warriors to Heroes.
Yeah.
And there we go. Three Houses. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to have Bernadette stories. I guarantee it. Because there's nobody that makes me laugh like Bernadetta.
Hopefully I'll have her in my house next.
All right, well, we will see you guys next week.
Joy surrounds, comfort abounds, and I can feel I'm breaking free.